Accession number 26864, Reel 8.
Arthur Caney, Reel 8. So we're talking about the Gagliano.
Mm-hmm.
So the Americans had tried to...
Well, we understand. We didn't meet the, at their stage. We hadn't met them.
No.
But we were told that they tried to. And this was very important because the Germans were in full force with their best, some of their best troops.
So this was first of all a job for the engineers, was it?
No, in this case they couldn't quite do it. No, we embossed at night and travelled close to the area where we were going to disembark, then we had to cross. But we had boats, assault boats, had prepared ready for us when we got there. Small boats, we could get about 6 men in a boat. And there was a lot of shelling coming over from the Germans. They were well prepared as a defensive position. So there's a company commander, myself as something, and a platoon commander of the water platoon then, and a few other, I don't know who they are, of our headquarters staff. We got in this boat, and we, it's at night, dark, shelling coming over, mortars. So I remember we got in this assault boat. Others were doing it in another direction, which I'm so only know what happened in this. So we crossed against a bank, and as we got out of the boat, I remember the company commander going forward, and I had to wait till he got off. It was a high bank. So the platoon commander and myself got out together. We seemed to step all together against the bank. So we went against the bank before we guided forward. And the mortar shells were dropping quite a lot. And I could hear one just by us. Fizzed. Went off. Now, I was so close, we were close together, touching each other as we got off the bank. Now, as it exploded, he was then cut underneath. Now, it was dark. I sensed that he'd been... I knew he was dead that second. Although I hadn't tested it, not... And the smell from the stomach went to the wound. He was lying down, but I knew it was there. It must have been a slash of the shrapnel. Big piece. And I went on to join the company commander and told him what had happened. But I thought afterwards, how... I instinctively knew he was dead, without testing. And it was a pity, because he was a good chap.
What was his name?
Power. Mm. Yes.
Did that... I mean, how alarmed were you? You say it very casually now. You must have been quite...
Well, it was... No, it was... We don't forget, we'd lost a lot. Yeah. We knew... No, this is... No, you don't get alarmed, because you could do the job. Look, the way I see it, from what you say, the way I see it is this. Everybody was doing their job. So what happened, you knew it could happen. I mean, it couldn't happen. I mean, you can't get alarmed. I mean, I don't quite see the how you can get alarmed, because you're going to do something which you can't change.
Yes. Yeah.
No, none of our chaps were alarmed. But there was, we were going through a lot of mortar shells, and they were so accurate. They'd been defensive positions. So we got off, went forward, and then we carried on, and then it got light in the morning. And the shells came over, heavy ones. Now, they were not our 25-pounders. They were American shells. That's how big they were. And we're crossing an open space. This is their shells, helping us. Talk about friendly fire now, they do. This was not very friendly, I tell you. It dropped in wide space, and we were blown off the ground by it. I'll never forget, Georgie was the company commander, and I had to keep some measure close to him. And he was off to a flank. He could see what to do. So I followed him quickly, and we came across. We got out of this shelling, which was really... Our own people would not have done that. They didn't have their... Their gunners didn't have any forward over observation posts. Now, in our units, we have the artillery which supports us. The forward observation officer with a sergeant was forward all the time. Now, when I look back, those people were heroes for months and months and months. They were forward at every battle. With every company was forward, they were with them to see what, to bring the fire forward. Americans, they couldn't have done it then. I've always think with pride, as I said, the Cheshires and the forward, how wonderful they were, because they saved us all the time. Anyway, this is early now, it gets a bit late. So we move forward. We saw a building. So I was going to go there. So the company commander said, no, you stay here, it's your job. Because I really felt I should go there, but he didn't want me to. So then we went forward and with the mortar platoon, pioneer platoon. You know the pioneers we mentioned. So we're going along this track. And our forward companies, we know, had gone further through the... So we were safe enough where we were then, because the forward companies were fighting and doing pretty well too. Anyway, stopped under a bank to sit and rest. So I went over the top, over the side, to have a look round. Actually, I was going to have a Jimmy Riddle. And I was about to do that when... two Germans were standing with their hands up. See? So I thought, well, now where they come from? And then I saw. I called the pioneer sergeant to take them away. Then I looked in there. They had a dugout so well organised. Everything all wooden panels and all that. And the front where we were sitting, just above our heads, this machine gun, you couldn't see it from the front. It was so well camouflaged. It was over the top of the heads. Now, had these young soldiers, I knew they were young soldiers, because when they put their hands up, I got my pistol quickly, or instinctively, and I saw the look in their eyes. I could see that they didn't know what was going to happen. And they could have, if they had done what, I suppose they were knew that they were surrounded. Because had they used their machine gun, they would have wiped the whole company up, the whole lot. Easy. But I thought, how skilled they were, whoever prepared their position. Now, later on in that day, German tanks came along just below where we were, and they were knocked out by our carrier platoon with a Piat. And the building which I told you about, the medical people, the doctor and the stretcher bearers, had assembled in there, made a post. And because we were shelled a lot on a bank there, very close to this building, I remember calling out for the stretcher bearers for one of our sons who had been wounded through so much shell. Not machine guns, but shell. So they took him away. And a few minutes later, a German ambulance, I didn't see this, I knew this from a few days later, or around the time, especially in the history, but then we knew that a German ambulance had come along and the doctor and his team were able to capture them. I thought it was very, very apt. But our companies, we moved up forward, just below the company area, and our mortar platoon was with the forward A company. And there was a fierce battle for 2 or 3 days there. And A Company, I know now, I knew only once that they'd been captured, but they'd been captured twice and retaken through shelling. They were able to get away. And it was pitch black when a stretcher was coming down the road. They were about 300 yards ahead. So the stretcher came down, so I was there to see it going by. And inside, there was one German and one of our sergeants, who then got the MM for what he had just done, wounded in the eye. Now, he couldn't speak, but there were a German and one of ours at night on their own with a driver, come down the hill. Not bad, is it, really? They should be just that driver looking after those two men. Anyway, years later, I had a message from the man, the sergeant, who was wounded. He was blinded, went to St. Dunstan's. And he said he'd heard my voice and then knew he was safe. He couldn't see anything, of course. And I didn't know, I could see his stripes, I didn't know who it was. And they had a lot of casualties then. So did the Germans. The history shows that this is one of our best battles.
So how long did that battle go on?
Oh, it was a long time, yes. There was Twofold, was the place, and Tremoncioli. A lot were buried on Tremoncioli. There's a woman, an Italian woman, that this last 10 years written a book about the battle there. She must have been a child at the time.
Yes.
Not that we saw him.
Yeah. So the medics, were they... They would be very much in touch with HQ Company, a sport company, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Your medical team. So what did you have in the way of medics? Did you have a doctor?
We had the headquarters.
Yeah.
Happened to come up then. Normally they were headquarters a bit further back normally, because we were support company. But our headquarters was straightforward, because all our platoons were in different areas. But because of the battle, they had to get close to the battle. And a couple of days later, the 25-pounders, the artillery, came up in our area and we moved forward. But they were able to get across the river. They were brought across the river. And you know, these are the men I told you about, we met before. They were stripped to the waist, firing, and it was tricky because there was a big wood hill in front. Now, they were so skilled, they had to get it over, but it was how steep. You see, it wasn't easy. They were too close. They were, well, not too close, but they were doing some wonderful work. Wonderful work.
What about the medics? Did you have a doc?
A doctor, a sergeant.
Yeah.
And a couple of corporals, maybe.
Right. Who was the doctor? Do you remember him more?
I can't. Oh, the good doctor, I know, but there's a sergeant. He won the MM later on in Anzio.
Really? Yeah.
He did a wonderful job. Yeah. They all did it. Yeah. I mean, I called out for stretcher bearers. The shells were still coming down. And they came through. There we are. They look after them as normal, you know. No, they did their work.
Yeah. And the doctor was able to do operations and everything.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, they were, yeah. Later on, there was some. Anzio was the worst one for them. But this was just... Well, this was a tricky battle. When you read about it... Because this particular company was on and off and on and off. And when they were captured, the few that were captured, the shells would come again, they were released again. And that's where we lost... One company was reduced. They were insufficient to carry on again. After that battle.
I mean, how you weren't getting much sort of rest in between, were you? I mean, these battles were going on sort of when they were on continuously, were they day and night? Or
yes, but don't forget, different companies, and the battalions we had, each battalion, one would come back a bit and the other would take over because they lost so many. But shelling was grim. As I was walking around, I mentioned about the stretcher bearer coming down. But in that area where we concentrated was our little headquarters, only a few. And I was walking by a building. We didn't go in buildings because we thought that they would attract shelling. But there was an entrance to the building with steps going up in the centre. Funny way, no door at the bottom, but there's steps going in the centre of the building. Now I was walking by there and a shell dropped. And the blast blew me up a few steps in this building. Now, a few yards below, I've been blown against the wall with great strength. But in this case, I was blown up with a gap of the wall. And when you think, I think, it shook me up a bit, I must say, because it was the blast.
Yeah.
You can't hear, and it doesn't help at all. But I thought I was lucky to get blown up, because not touched. Just a blast by being blown up the steps. Funny,
though. Yeah. So tell me what blast is like. I mean, do you hear the noise of the blast?
We heard the shell burst. and a whoosh like that. But it was the strength of the air, you see. Picture. You wouldn't think it was possible, would you? To not be touched.
There must have been some terrible injuries. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, and people killed.
Oh, yeah, then we lost a lot. Yeah.
As a Sergeant Major, did you have any particular duties or recording duties when someone was killed? Or?
Oh, yes, we had to sort out, get the friend.
Yeah, what did you do when someone was...
Well, this is the early part of it. Later on, I'd not much to do then, because our forward companies were doing their job, forward platoons, from my company. So I was with the company commander and a runner. And I would visit when required to see them. At this particular time we're talking about, there was so much going on you couldn't visit. But later on in Anzio it was a different story. I had to make sure the ammunition, they had sufficient ammunition and things like that. And also to see it. See, all to man, I was the eyes of the seer of the company commander to let him know how the platoons were getting on.
And your company commander was who?
George Warner, the man who's still there. He's my friend up there now, who was up. Yeah, when you think of it, all these, we got away with. Well, we always said we were forcing because we were a bit of a headquarter. So it was only the shelling and the landings. But the ordinary battles, we're a little bit further back. So it's only shelling we had to worry about. Yeah.
So how did you get on with George then? Did you get on well always? You could work together easily, could you?
Well, yes, because he joined from before the war, my regiment, when I was just joined as a recruit. Right. So I joined the battalion after about 6 months training. And at the same time as he joined, we both were then in the athletic team.
Right. Oh yes, I think you mentioned that. Yes.
So therefore, each Sunday, instead of going to church, which I could have volunteered to go, but didn't, would be training. We'd assemble on the Barrack Square.
Yes.
George would be in charge of the different teams. So you can see really, as well as being close in training, and later when I became a Lance Corporal, I was on course. George was on the same sort of course,
right,
on different things. So yeah, that's why I knew him.
So it's fortunate you were together, because you knew each other's ways quite well, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So the Italian campaign goes on.
Yeah. Ah.
Then leading up to Anzio.
So. Yes. Yeah. Well, now, the Gargliano, that was a tricky one, you see. And all the German forces were against... They were losing as many as we were losing, and it was because of our artillery and MMG, and plus our own forward companies. As well as that, the division further up towards which we now was Casino, they called some of our battles then Casino, but it wasn't. We were not actually there. We were part of the battle, but doing a different job. But then we had to get out of there. We had to, in January 1944, yes, right, they landed, troops landed on Anzio, which was British and American. Now, we were on the Gargliano. Fighting there was keeping the troops away from Anzio. I know that now, I didn't know that then. But at that day, we knew we had to go around. So there, we were then embarked to go round to Anzio. That was in March. That was about 2 months, 2 months after the landing, January, February, March. So as a division, we were then brought round to help out in Anzio. Now, Anzio was a tricky one.
So tell me about arriving at Anzio. Do you know what sort of position you went into, and
yes,
how was your arrival?
Yes, yes, I do. We landed, I can't forget much getting off, but I know we marched. We marched straight away into battle. We went straight away up to a place called the Fortress. Now, the Fortress was one of the worst areas against, dug in with trench small pits, not connecting, but forward areas, and it was very bad. And
Where were the Germans? What, you know, you were dug in. What?
Well, they were dug in just not a lot far away.
What sort of territory is this?
Open land, well, and valleys and wadis and rivers. I mean, we moved around, but you're talking about when we moved.
Yes, yes.
We moved in that night. Mm. Yes, we were sheltering in the night. They knew when we were moving all the time. Mm. Oh, they could hear almost whatever it was. Long way up, 10, 15 miles. Mm. And we moved again into a wood. We stayed in there some time. Our headquarters, and the platoons were amongst us. We, Kaya platoon was there, Pioneer platoon in this wood, and the cook. We had our own cook for change there. And that's the funny thing about this place. It was a tricky one. We had Sheikh Rogers, the man who had the VC later. He had the Kaya platoon, and he, of course, with the pioneers, was able to use the thunder boxes. So he fixed one up for the troops, for ourselves, and one he fixed up for the CO, the company command, out of sight, all camouflage, and the kitchen over there. And early one morning, Sheikh and I had been round to look at the troops. We sat on these thunder machines having a chat and doing new business. And suddenly, early in the morning, it was cold. Suddenly, a machine gun opened up above us, or the trees, you see. So that wasn't too bad. But then it started coming low, slowly, slowly down. They were cutting it. And, you know, this sounds far so good, you know. We finished up with On the Floor, and we just missed this. And we couldn't help laughing because it was so daft. Sat on the front of it, on the floor. And I thought, well, how in the deuce did they know where we were? Because it couldn't. We were inside the wood. It was camouflaged quite a lot. Then we realised that the cooks, they had a cooker, hydro burner, which used fuel which didn't give smoke. But because of the mist, the only reason I can think is the mist in that wood, so thick, the hot air must have thinned it down so that they could see it at a distance. So they were not shooting at us with our backsides showing through the back of the wood. They were shooting at the steam where they knew it must have been cooker. But it was a bit of a funny one, that, I must say. We got shelled a lot there. But, oh, well, I've got to tell you this one. We moved into takeover from the Americans.
This first position.
Mm, yeah. This one went, yeah. But, you know, we got so fed up. The shells were dropping as we were handing over, or taking over. Now, all these were still in there. They wouldn't get out of there. Place. And we were going by, you see, to take over from. They had to be ordered out to get back, but they must have been just off the boat. But when we got to their areas, which they had been using, they called them foxholes. I don't know why they call them foxholes. But they were full of Playboy magazine, sweets, cigarettes, chock-a-block. So I got a couple of lads from the pioneer platoon with sacks to fill them up with the good stuff, throw the rest away, clean it all up, so that we had stuff to issue out to them again, to the troops, except that didn't give them Playboy. We dumped those. Thought it was not the thing to have.
They kept in the sergeant's mess,
didn't
they?
We didn't have a sergeant's mess. Now,
so what was your opinion at the time of the American
army? Well, those we met...
soldiers.
No, as these, they must have been infantry, they were no good. But later on, with a few days, we met some combat engineers. They were spot on. Yeah. They were mobile engineers, had their heavy stuff. They didn't stay with us long, but they were soldiers.
And what did they do for you?
They happened to be close to us.
Yeah.
Well, I think they must have been probably there as protection with their heavy weapons at that short time, before they moved off.
Now, you said the American infantry was no good. Why was that? What was
wrong with them? Reading up, we know they just got off the boat. I mean, they hadn't had any training. If they'd just got off the boat from
the
UK...
At the time, did you think they weren't much cop?
We knew they weren't much cop.
Why? What was it they couldn't do?
Well, they're not soldiers. They were hiding... Oh, no. The shells were dropping. Everybody's walking, doing the normal thing. And there they are. They hadn't been used to it. They were untrained. But that, later on, we met a bit more of them when we came for a rest. Excuse me. But at this time, we were in Anza for a long time. Yeah. Now, this area, I know from speaking to my own sergeants and so on of other companies, they had a rough time. They were a few forward areas where they were not connected, they were just in isolated pack pockets. Now, later on, we came back to a rest area. The rest area really was only the artillery area, because it was a small area. That was bombed all the time. Machines come. Anyway, we came for a rest, and we came back for rest the first time. We were able to fix up tents, dig them in, and the people who'd stayed behind had built a mess for us, and low down, and as just had windows made of beer bottles so that you could see through, and they put logs over the top, and the sergeant, he was Remy sergeant, he looked after the arms, armourer, wonderful chap, and he prepared it, and not only did he prepare this for us with the troops and the rear, he then had, I told you we had 17 sergeants. We lost one or two on the way, but 17 was the figure. So he had 17. He had prepared 17 mugs. I've got one in there today now. It was from a bottle, beer bottle, which had been cut because they put oil in it, and a hot poker or something, steel, that would cut it. So he trimmed it up. They put a handle on. But when we came back for the rest, there's one in front for us. I've got mine. And I put one in the museum. Sheikh Rogers won the VC later. But at that stage, he was there with us. And we all sat there, and we had our beer issue. We were entitled to one bottle of whiskey, too, per month. But we didn't really want it. We're not whiskey drinkers, so it was beer, really. Anyhow, the Americans came along with their massive wagons, you know, you've seen the American big vehicles, and that was chock-a-block with cigarettes and sweets. Now they wanted they knew that we were each had a bottle of whiskey. Now they were dry, they didn't have anything. Do you know, nobody would give the Americans one bottle of whiskey for a wagon load of cigarettes.
Because you didn't like the Americans.
Exactly. We could have done. Because, I mean, we didn't take our ration. We didn't take all our... You couldn't, I mean. Because we were only resting for a short time. But later on, we met some of the good troops. Yes, they were...
Yes, so there's clearly quite a lot of resentment somehow towards the Americans. Was it two ways. Trying to buy your whiskey?
No, you see... I haven't come at the stage yet where I tell you more about them. But the resentment was many. Came starting right from the beginning, didn't it? Here we fighting from... 42, we'd already Dunkirk to France, hadn't we? Mm. Then 1942, we were on the way. We hadn't been back. We wouldn't get back to, didn't go back to 1950-something. But the Americans were in England, joining the fight of the land. But the worst thing was, at least personally, I was envious of the fact they had rations, of plenty of it. Half of what we learned later we didn't want. We tried it, it was no good, and they wanted ours. But their clothes... They had so much wonderful waterproof stuff. They could wear walking out clothes underneath their combat boot. They shouldn't have done because it didn't do them any good. It was silly to do it, but they were. They were in forward areas when they were walking. But the quality of that, the waterproof, the warm, in addition to which the weapons they had and the ammunition, we were rationed to what we could carry. So all in all, if they'd been as well trained as we were, we still wouldn't have liked them too much because of that, what they had in which we were envious of, and pay, of course. There's no doubt about it, was envy in a way, half of it. And we were not fortunate enough to meet at that stage any good troops. Right. We met some later.
Arthur Caney, end of reel 8.